I'm back at the 12th. Today is December the 12th, 1986. I'm Steve Frangos. I'm in Sarasota, Florida. I'm with the Bureau of Florida Folklife, and I'm with Mr. Harold Dunn in his building here where he keeps his truck and all his extra circuses and stuff. And we're looking now at the Lion Act that he made at
Universal
Studios, and we're just going to talk about that. So we're going to let the tape run and just talk. So this was the one that you said that you made on the spot?
This is Clyde Beatty in white, right here. And now these, you take these type figures here. These are the ones I told you about that we made the duds, and then we cast them what would be the farthest out part of a carving. And then we're able to carve away out of styrene plastic and then, of course, heat them up molding. But now, all of this stuff here, this is all wood. Take this little figure here. I can make one of them after band sold out about 45 minutes. Take and lock that figure out there. A zebra like that, one thing you got to remember when you look at this stuff.
Yes, sir.
If it hadn't been for my first wife, brother, under no circumstances would you see anything like this that you see here now. No way.
You mean because of her ability to paint?
Her ability to paint over in this piece here. You see all these robes on these elephants and camels and all that? That's all my first wife's work. That's all Barbie's work. Every bit of this stuff. All this designing like this. All the paint job. Now, when we did the greatest show on earth at Fairmont Studios, we had a contract to do not, let's see if there's, no, I don't have, there's another case. And we had to have the stuff painted within a certain period of time. That's by contract or we forfeited. All right? The circus didn't know what they were going to have yet. They didn't have any idea, didn't have it made. So she went ahead and used her own judgment about what she thought would look the best as far as painting costumes, the color and design. You know what DeMille did? He made them copy the colors and stuff of course with some of the stuff that she made. And that's what they used for all the retake scenes in the movie. And now, when we tear down, for instance, you take this how it comes off, that comes apart. The fans come out of the girls' heads and hats. Robes come off the elephants. There's all different little boxes that they load into. And I'll show you in a minute the wagons that those boxes load into. This thing is just exactly like a real circus. Brother, when it tears down, it loads up.
Now, Mr. Dunn, you had said to me that when you were growing up, you'd always wanted to own a circus. When did you first... And you showed me some of the wagons at your house that you would carve when you were in high school and stuff. When did you first get into, I know that you told me that you were carving from a young boy, according to your family, but when did you first start to really want to get into circus stuff?
I mean,
when did
this happen? I saw my first circus when I was 5 years old. My people said, I always talked about being a railroad engineer. I used to go out and sit on top of the boxcars when I was a young kid in grade school and watch the trains go by in a little town of 425 people off the town of Badminton. I quit wanting to be an engineer. I wanted to own my own circus from 5 years old. And as I told you, I had to learn how to carve since before I can remember. Practice an hour every day all the way through school. And
where did you see your first circus?
At Enid, Oklahoma.
Where, sir?
Enid.
Enid, Oklahoma? Was that where you were from? Was that where you were born?
No, I was born out in Panhandle.
Oh, Panhandle. I'm sorry, I don't know the
geography. That's all right. But born and raised, there's German settlements out there. All the people in those towns out there were nothing but German. That's all they was. See, my people, the whole clan came over.
How many people was there? Say the whole clan. Your grandfather came?
I could sit down and figure out putting every one of them. I'd say there probably was about 14 or 15, maybe 18 of them all together. Because there was my mother and her two sisters and her brother, her mother and then my father and three other children.
You say your grandfather taught you how to carve and assisted on it. What was his name?
Cosmo was his first name. C-O-S-M-O. Mm-hmm. And
was he your paternal or maternal father? I mean, your grandfather. Was he your mother's
father? My father's father.
So he was done too as well then.
Yeah. My, even the women did a lot of carving. See, just as soon as the snow would fly, so they couldn't get out and do things that was necessary for their own sustenance.
Yes, sir.
They started wood carving, and when that first oxen cart came up with supplies, in the spring when the snow would start to go up, and they could get up the mountain to the village.
Yes, sir.
And incidentally, there's dozens and dozens of those little villages still up the mountains over there.
Yeah.
Dozens of them.
What village was your family from?
You embarrass me.
No, sir. I'm not meaning to.
I can't remember. I've got all this down as far as that's concerned,
sir.
But things of that nature I've forgotten a long time ago.
Yes, sir.
And unless I check it up.
No,
but
sir.
You saw those big scrapbooks over there.
Yes, sir.
Those are
all
scrapbooks of my life and family and friends. I'm a very sentimental person. And I have cultivated very few friends. The ones I did, I went all out for. Nothing I wouldn't do for them. Well, anyway, that's beside the point.
What kind of stuff would they carve when you said that the people would carve in the winter? What would they do?
They made clocks, jewelry boxes, whole candlestick holders. A lot of nativity figures. They made a tremendous number of nativity figures, some of them all over maybe an inch and a half high, on up. And then when this ox cart would come up, there was a guy from England would come over and buy everything they had. That's what they bought the supplies with.
I see.
And they'd get sugar and salt and things, you know, tools and all the things they needed.
Well, now, and I mentioned to you over the phone, my dad is a carpenter. He now builds buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I remember growing up, and I'm just 35, certain power tools came into the shops, when they started to melt the Formica, with these heating elements and stuff. Now, your people, if they're up in the mountains there, they must have not had any kind of power tools, right? What were they using then?
They had little crude hand saws. They called them a coping saw. The blades would be about that long.
What, 6-7 inches?
Yeah, sure. And then they'd be on a big U-shape with a handle out here, and they'd saw. Sometimes it'd be a board maybe 2 inches thick. But the patience you had to do some of that stuff that they did, I couldn't do it.
Well, no, when you were growing up and your grandfather was showing you, this sort of tradition, did he make you use those kind of coping saws, or did you, what happened when
to
it
start
went
with,
to start with, I see.
What else would I have? Because I didn't have any power machinery.
I see.
And now I've got everything. You saw up there, Dremel. Yeah, have you ever heard of Dremel tools?
No, sir.
Little hand tools, grinders and stuff?
No.
Dremel sends me that stuff free because I have sold multi-countless thousands of dollars worth of tools for them because my workbench always set up in the show. See, we've showed the show since 1947 on the road. And during that length of time, as I told you, there's been millions and millions of people who have seen this thing.
Yes, sir.
And I'd set, people wouldn't believe that one man made it. I'd put the bench right up in front of people. Bill Bonner's right in front of them.
Right, so they could see you do it on
sure.
the spot.
Absolutely.
Nice.
And then answer their questions. Sometimes, I know, you have some people come up and they're not interested in what you're doing, they're not interested in you, they're interested in making an impression for themselves. You don't just want to talk, right? I'll bet you. All right, they come up and they just keep asking questions and holding up the line and stuff like that. So you got the point to where you could spot that kind of people a mile off. So I'd see them on the other side of the table, and I'd get one of the girls to come over. This is terrible, but it just some of the quirks of the game and I'd have one, the store or the shopping center, wherever we was in, they had to furnish help for the show, sometimes 16 of them at a time. And I'd have one of the girls stand over and stand on my bench, and they'd come up, they start asking a bunch of questions, they'd say, I'm sorry, Mr. Dunn, I stole that heat cover here. What did you say? Now, if you answer, I'll try to answer your question for you. And if you can't, why, you write it down, bring it back later on sometime this week when we're still open, and I'll hand it to him and have him, we'll write down the answer for you. They try to be nice about it, but you can make you so nervous trying to satisfy people without mentioning it. In painting, you don't have the slightest idea, not the slightest, of the importance of the paint job on the figure to set them off. Now we have figures that we call quick cars. Mm-hmm. Now, those little red men that's over here with this,
yeah, with the,
these are quick cars.
This is with the tiger, I mean with the lion act here.
The one that's leading the animals, mm-hmm. taking care of the ring and stuff like that. Now, Clyde Beatty, if you see the front of him, he looks just exactly like Clyde Beatty does. Not a bit different. They had to because it was a copy from, and then the animals, now some of those animals are cast animals mm-hmm. after, if they were just alike to fill out the act,
yeah.
to do it in a hurry. And I'm the guy that was a superintendent of the minister's department. So I got together with him and we did some of those together. That's all like this tiger right here.
Yeah,
and then they had a man that took these out and painted them. You can tell the difference between his painting. Look at that tiger sitting on a stool over there in the center. Yeah. See? That's my wife. This is him. Now here's Elephant Eye.
Yeah.
Now this little girl right here, it looks just like her, Mary Jane Miller. She has a business here in Sarasota.
Huh.
She's still the sweetheart of the circus, she always will be. That's,
And these, and these are wooden elephants? These are all carved out?
Sure.
My God.
I make four of them in one day.
My God.
After their bandsawed out, I'll rough them out at night between 7 and 11:30 at night, and then finish them up the next day. Now, that's not carved. Mm-hmm. And if there's, now you take the horses.
Mm-hmm.
When I make the horses, if they have manes or fetlocks or,
yes,
or what have you on it, I make that out of plastic. What you can do with plastic before I found this other, and you still couldn't use that for fetlocks and things on horses, you still have to use plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one of your tricks. Now you take a camel, let's see if we can find one over here.
Yes, sir.
There's some there, yeah. But that's not the good ones.
Okay.
Those are quick cars over there for spec. The good camels, I've got a 16 camel hitch. You carve out the camel, and then to put the hair on it, and camels have splotches, big blotches of hair, and then they'll be kind of almost no hair at all someplace. All right, what you do with that, you use a third Duplo cement. You can't use any other kind.
Yes, sir.
And that's why I've told guys, they say, well, look, they'll get with their friends, it wouldn't work, you tell me what the wouldn't work. What kind of cement did you use? Oh, I used Ambroid, or I used Sobo, or something like that. That's where the trouble was. You've got to use the one I told you.
Yes, sir.
Then you use third that, you use two-thirds plastic wood. You take your spatula. Now, the important part of that is to, I tell them to stick it in a, keep a little bottle of water, stick it in the water, and then work it like that. And I stick it in my mouth, I'd eat more plastic wood than you'd ever bring it on that day. But, In any event, you work it like that, or you do the same thing with horse manes. I see if we got any here, pal, with my box.
Well, I don't
want to.
Well, I see this box.
See?
Mm-hmm.
See what it does? Looks just exactly like hair on it.
Yeah, that's right.
And,
well, you had mentioned to me, too, now that when we were looking at the box before, that your grandfather showed you a lot of different cuts and stuff. You've changed over the years, you know, you've seen new techniques and you've, you know, gone with what's been good, you know, and helpful. Was then the shift from, like, you know, the hand tools, the coping saws, did you guys ever use chisels? I mean, how did you, I mean, you must have had, you made your own chisels.
I still got steel that my grandfather bought from Germany. And he taught me how to, you take wagons. Well, that's no good because this is another wagon that was made in high school. This was made my junior year in high school.
African Nubian lines.
And that's my wife's letter. She was beautiful. I mean, she could do it.
This is phenomenal. I mean, you know, I'm sure that many people have told you.
Well, it's been shown all over the United States and Europe. These cases, get that out of my system.
Yeah, plexiglass cases.
At the fair, we had 1,700 square feet of cases. And I had a lot of the show up in cases like this. All of these cases was full. Now, at the end of the fair, we were so successful, the fair was so pleased with the effort that we put forth. Here, I don't want to break more, I'll do it easy again. They gave me these cases. In the other room here, they spent $35,000 for a lighting system for that room. They gave me these cases, gave me the lighting system, and had it trucked down there for me. No charge. Just did it.
Now, you've been at five World Fairs, so which World Fair was this?
Knoxville.
Knoxville.
And I turned down New Orleans because it was too close. See, when I did the New York World Fair, it was 2 years. Then in 2 years, I went to Montreal. And we was dead. The crew was just, they could hardly drag. And then we did the Utah Centennial Exposition. That was one of the biggest busts in all of amusement history. Then we did the Texas Hemisphere. We did Montreal. We did the New York World Fair at Knoxville. And now, I could have gone to the World Fair at Vancouver, British Columbia. But when you do one of these fairs, you have to take a examination for a performance bond. Because you have to take out a performance bond of the New York World Fair was $2 million. Because when they spend a lot of money for a big building and installation and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they want stuff to be.
And you can't get up there and get it up. Boy, you're out of luck. And I'd be by myself because my first wife, the one I lost, in May of 1977. There's no way of telling you how important she was as far as setting up here on that show. Here's some of your performance.
Oh, yeah.
So this was a case, too. Now, this act here goes back to 1883 on Sells' show. There's a lawyer of Penske's. They live right here in Sarasota. And these two girls live in Sarasota. Those little towns, that was something that pumped up there. This is the famous May Worth. She was a very, very close personal friend of mine before she died. Really, extremely close. But I had them up, I set them up last January for the Women's Club here in town. They wanted me to set some stuff up for this January showing. And I had a chance to be on the committee on it, but they didn't want it. Because you just kept, you've got to take out insurance on the stuff, and
yes,
I just want to be biased. Now here's some more of your show.
Yes, sir. One of your cabinets. Oh yeah, there's just shelves. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shelves worth of just...
And there's approximately 3, 6, 9, 12...
Could I take that one out? Why is it run? Is that a water one? That's a fire. Is that a fire engine for the circus, or just a water thing to
sure.
Get around?
Sure. Hauls water
for all the animals and everything that they have
sure.
To support.
And then this is fire department stuff on the back end.
I see.
See, that's if they have a fire or something. And then this is sprinkled down the lot.
Yeah, to keep the
and
dust
they,
down.
They hook hoses on these two ends here. And my present wife is one of the pain. Just if my first wife would have been there, she'd have known what color to make these, which would have been different than they are now. These should have been actually a real bright red, not this kind of red, but a real bright red. And then if you'll notice on this, see the seat springs work like
the right. Yeah, that's right. That's really good.
And all the back doors, everything works on this truck, no different than the real one. Just like I told you, when I made this thing, I used the pictures of the real thing to make it. Now, not this. After we got on the road, so I had a breadboard, a few tools in the hotel. And when we first started out, all you had was radio. But I listened to radio and used that breadboard. I made wagons in the hotel room at night. And
well, now, didn't you, I know the answer to this, but... you would obviously go to circuses and look at the wagons that they had there.
I went with the Ringling Show every year from 1940 till I went bogus as a guest, excepting two war years. I was on a first B-29 test, bomber test hot crew they ever formed. And I didn't get to go then because we was testing planes as fast as they come out of the factory. and after 29s went into production. And I worked up through the factory until they got the planes in production, because they couldn't get wood pattern makers. And they were slowing up going into production. And I worked for a big tooling company out of Kansas City at that time. Formerly, for 16 years, I was in music at the big time. I played with three of the biggest bands in the country. Horse Height, Sammy Kaye, and Orrin Tucker at Georgia Beach, Chicago. And then I graduated from Naval Conservatory of Music.
What was your instrument?
I played drums and vibraphones for the band. But I started playing in orchestra at the end of the eighth grade in school. I played sax and clarinet, played third chair, sax and clarinet. And see, that was my life, was practicing music and making circus. Wood carving, I started out making animals, some horses, not hardly any wagons. To start out with. But I made animals and horses and stuff like that. And this cabinet is.
Well, that's built in my gun.
And here's some of your Mack trucks. This was quite a figure.
The giant seal here.
Seal, yeah. And then when they take him back to his car, that's when those plastic figures I told you about. But that's just exactly the way the figure came out on that particular one. And we cut the coat down. And then this will turn up like that, see? And they load jacks from the seats to the big top down. After they put him down to the car, there's more pieces. And there's everything out of the sun you can think of.
What accessories that go to... When did Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey stop touring the country? I'm sorry, I don't know what year that was.
Well, they still do as far as that's concerned, but in 1957, turn that off.
Yeah, yes, sir.
There was no entertainment. I've got a big farm out there.
What part of Kansas is that where you have the farm, sir?
It's Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, I'm sorry.
Panhandle Country.
Panhandle Country, but I mean, what's the name of the place, I mean, specifically?
It's a little town of Jet.
Jet?
Yeah. And when on Sunday afternoons, on our farm, they had a great big giant living room. All right, here comes about 10 or 12, maybe 20 families. The adults would put their chairs, each family would bring their own chairs. They wouldn't have enough. Didn't think they could do.
That's right, I know.
They'd make a big circle, like this. Mm-hmm. And they'd all sit there, everybody's jabbering at one time. All right, so-called Mr. Smith over here asked Mr. Jones a question. That's the end of it. You don't hear an answer. First thing, maybe in 10 minutes, Mr. Smith answers Mr. Jones' question. Mr. Jones is batting his gums, and he hears the answer. It satisfies him, and I mean, he just keeps talking on. He just catalogs the answer in his mind, and that gets the job done. The whole circle is just yakety, 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 just like I've been doing. And now, whether it's born in me, they used to do the same thing on the mountain. They'd go to one another. Sometimes in wintertime, I've heard my mother say that it was pretty cozy, because if the snow, sometimes the snow would get up the eaves of the houses. As I told you, they have to tunnel from the house into a little so-called shed. The houses were all made out of logs.
Yeah.
And they'd have this little log barn where they kept the goats and the hogs and all that kind of stuff. And water. They just take the snow and melt the snow to get water. That's where they get the water. And then somebody has to get out sometime, maybe once a week, to get the food. It was allotted to eat so much to each family.
Yeah.
And if they start running short, then they'd
go hunting.
Some of the tales, hey, y'all had a tape recorder to listen to them folks talk. Boy, you'd get a story that would curl your hair. But I don't... my granddad, he never cared anything about the circus. The music, he hated it. I had to take my instruments and walk a mile north in the cow pasture to practice my instruments. And then when I started playing vibraphones, I bought a set of vibraphones when I first started my freshman year. I kept them at the home economics department in the school. And at night, I'd go there after everybody was out of school, at least to that department, and practice my vibes maybe a couple, 3 hours a night sometimes. And that's where I really got my big, got in the big time with this. It was on vibraphones, and then I was fair going. Now these boxes,
yes, sir.
If you, I'll take this out and show you the carving. Now there's probably 30 or 35 of these trade wagons. See, let's see how I tell you. When I study in the research collection, or when I was on the road with the show and I'd hear the old heads that went way back talk, I'd go at night on the train and with a flashlight, I'd write down everything I'd been told that day. I still got those notes and measure stuff and everything. All right. Always wanting to own a show, I picked out what, in my opinion, was the best of everything, like bareback acts or flying acts and so on and so forth, trade wagons. And I made what I would have put on the show if I owned one, like I always wanted to. And that, all these, all those cages up there, you see, they all have these.
Yeah, they're these special, wraps you have, like, this is cloth, but, you know.
Well, the real ones had the same thing. They just exactly the same thing.
So, my God.
Now, this was the line in the mirror, right, Mike?
Gee whiz. This is excellent. You know that, but it's... Is there, I mean... Who, when you were, of course, younger and you were traveling around, was there anybody still alive who had done the carving on the side of the wagons like this, or was it just all memories by that time?
Well, let's see.
You were saying that it was in the 1880s that these sort of things were carved.
You see, you're asking a question now that could be answered a dozen different ways. Do you understand that?
Yeah, I know. If I take a picture of that, would that be possible?
Sure.
Well, if it's not a simple question, we don't need to have a simple answer, but, you know, I'm just saying. And I'm afraid that this is only black and white, but which is not going to do justice.
Let's put it on.
All right. We're going over here.
I'm putting it where I want it. That makes a difference. That 24 horse hitch is the one that hauls this wagon. But let's see if I can... Can I answer your question the way they used to do in the real circus on
yes,
the Barnum and Bailey show before they was combined with Ring your Sales show and all of them?
Sure.
The way they used to do to get the wood carvers that done stuff like this?
Mm-hmm.
All right. They're both exactly the same size, but you want to go a different direction. They go to Europe, in Germany especially, and they would get... real, honest-to-goodness craftsmen. I mean, outstanding craftsmen. They'd promise them the moon and build them a giant ranch and stuff up there if they'd come to the United States. Oh, man, they was going to live in clover and everything, you know. So they'd come.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they'd buy them steerage on a boat.
Okay.
All right, when they get to this country and they go into Ellis Island, there wasn't anybody there to meet them like they were supposed to be. So what they do, they'd get stuck in New York City. They had the German sections and they had these sections and this and this and this and this and so on. And they'd end up in the German section.
Okay.
All right. They'd be starving to death because they couldn't get jobs or couldn't get anything. So then there'd be another guy. I heard that you folks did wood carving. Okay, yes, we do wood carving. Is there any chance that I could see how good you was or so on? Well, he already knew, of course, because it was a follow-up. Well, I'll tell you what to do. We can't afford to pay you hardly anything. But we'll guarantee you a place comfortable to live in, and your firewood and everything, and we'll see to it that you have enough to eat and feed your family and all, and you'll wood carve on wagons, and they'd show them some pictures, you know, of the wagons. All right? They'd get them up to Bridgeport, Connecticut. And they'd get them such as it was, place to live, and they'd get them firewood. Most of the time it was old wood that was left over from wagons that was obsolete or something like that, you know, and then they'd haul them in firewood, and they'd work them guys from 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning till sometimes 11 o'clock at night, sometimes 7 days a week.
Okay.
And I've got pictures of them carving those things in the buildings.
Wow.
And these pictures go back into the late 1980s and 1990s. I mean,
1880s.
And there's a whole band that goes on here.
Yeah. So this particular cart, this is obviously a music cart with the
sure.
mirrored lines on.
And then that 24-horse hitch pulls it.
Now, would they, noting how, you know, careful they were about use of space, now the men sit up on the top of this wagon, would they store anything on the inside?
Sure, trunks.
Oh, Side 2, same day, still Harold Dunn.
Now they had some freight wagons that couldn't haul much. Now they had a series of wagons that, well, I can't show you the pictures because they're up to the house, but they was half wagons, and then the top half was big statues or like the Egypt wagon, or the Phoenician float, or some of them. There's all, Phoenician float was a big boat. And then they put, after they were gotten afraid, they put oars out on it. Big long oars. Long as from here to that end of the cabin over there. And then women rowed in this big boat. And they had guys dressed up like slaves at the oars. They had about 3 or 4 oars on, I think there's 4 oars on them on each side. I made the Egypt part, but a Phoenician float, that's a long thing. I liked it, but I didn't. But in any event, those were only half wagons, but in that half wagon, they still hauled themselves. Now you take some of these, they had false tops, and when they get through, there'd be several guys, you know, would lift those false tops up and build canvas and stuff. They was, circus history is a tremendously interesting thing, and I love to discuss it. If I get with people that are knowledgeable about it, that's why at the Ringling Museum, if they'd gone ahead and instead of horsing around like they did before I went to Tallahassee and withdrew the gift, If they would have built that building, you'd have had a giant room, and the table it would have sat upon was 116 feet long by 35 and a half feet wide. That would have been a big dehumidified case, just like that. And you went on one level and looked at it like you was, you know, looked at a surface loft. And then they was going to make a balcony where you looked down on like an airplane. Then you went into a middle room, and this middle room they had dioramas. I had so many extra things like these.
Yeah.
That those were going to be set up like this, or in shadow boxes, and it was going to, one of the shadow boxes was going to be, for instance, I've got one of the most outstanding set of carved prehistoric animals that you ever saw before.
Hmm.
There's not another set like them in the world. And we was going to set up a whole, maybe as large as 10 by 18 foot in the center of this big room with a glass case like this over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be a big diorama of prehistoric animals. And them, all the big poster displays and programs and all that type of stuff.
What was the problem? I mean, what happened down there? Just the legs.
Is that thing still on?
Yeah, that thing's still on. Okay, we're turning off the tip of our...
The light department...
What are we recording now?
The light department was one of the main things.
Could you extinguish the side? Put the name, you know, and just on it. So you can get... She wipes in this barber,
yeah. Yeah. And, in the light department, I knew what was necessary. Our Fort Wayne, Indiana, put up a contract, and they were to do everything from bringing in the initial electric into the building, all the way from the feeder cords, all the way to the finished lighting system, and all the electronic. Now you think this is a big top here, part of skeleton. It's all operated with no motors. It's all one, all the animation runs on electronics. And relay and solenoid action. And so they got a company out of Kansas City. $190,000 less. All right. You think I didn't know that if the dog was with, I knew that their proposal, there's no way it would work. No way in the world. And you think that $190,000 would have been saved? No way. That would have gone from the pocket. No, absolutely. And I wouldn't have to go to jail. And maybe not. Now this, you can see up here.
We're going to go up into the Dunn Brothers truck, or up in this area.
Come on up. Now watch where you step. This box, this one here, all the four railroad cars already finished. Even have the half-inch scale locomotive, the coal. This is all freight wagons. Nothing but freight wagons in that big box there. Those two big boxes over there, one of them is empty. That stuff is down in the...
I see. Case down.
The next one is about half empty. The stuff's in the other one. This is still full. The small spec units are still full. The miscellaneous wagon box is still full. That all hauls animals. And some of those animals come down, the bigger ones, like camels and stuff like that, all goes in that box. This is your sections for your services. See, what I've been doing, I'm making a complete inventory of every single phone. One of the girls and the husband's helping me. They're up north now, have been for the last 3.5 months. And they're moving down there. And just as soon as they get back down and I get these flat cars from these things, go ahead. See, these all of them mounted. For instance, here's compact wagon outriders. Frayed mounts. Outriders, mounted women, and mounted gents. It's all for sure. Let's see, this is important. Anybody with any common sense that new circus would say, how in the world do you expect us to believe any circus would have had this much? How right they would be. I've got enough parade equipment, enough spec equipment, enough acts to make up 20 services. But one thing they failed to take into consideration, they didn't have the same thing from 1900 to 1956. In each ring and each stage and so on, they changed sometimes every year, sometimes every 3 years. and the parade would change from show to show. The parade would change. The spec changed every year.
Well, when you say spec, what do you mean by spec?
That in that case down there.
Yeah. Oh, spectacle.
Spectacle. A circus would call them spec. I thought about this. You may have the bulbs screwed up. Let me see. It's a shame that stuff was not taken care of halfway decent. But I've left that. There's no use to get it all back out again.
Another time. You know, we're up on the storage platform for people trying to listen to this tape. And we're
right.
I'm talking to the tape as if someone is going to listen to it, which I hope they do. We're inside Mr. Dunn's, this part of his garage, which has his number two truck in it. And he used to have a work bench set up in the front. And he's now looking to find out what's happening with his lights on the inside of the truck. But this is how he would carry the entire show with him when he would travel around, not the entire thing, but this is one of the vehicles that have it. So we're up on a wooden platform that led up to it. And there are shelves behind it that have the sorts of exhibits that can't be put in boxes.
Now
like the
just let me get out of there.
Yeah. Coming down the ladder now.
And the stool.
See, I had this building broke into not too long ago.
You have another club thing
today? Fortunately, they didn't get.
It seems like it's plugged into that box and it came unplugged. So you got your BX running into that box. No, that's not even working.
That's supposed to plug. No, this is supposed to plug in over there.
Okay. You want to go back in there and fish it up to you?
No, I can do it.
Well, did they know what
they got? See, there's so many facets of this thing that it's impossible. Let's see if I can. Did you ever hear of the Bettman Archives in New York City?
Yeah,
picture
sure.
Archives?
Yeah, sure.
Otto Bettman and I are the very closest of personal friends. He lives at Fort Myers now. He was a surgeon on Hitler's private staff. In other words, medical staff.
Yeah.
He's a German Jew. Finally, Hitler had him, just before the war's end, Hitler had him put in the concentration camp because he wouldn't turn Nazi. Before he suspicioned the war coming. Before that, he got his picture collection down in the, somewhere around Greece or in there. He don't talk much about this. You've got to remember this and that,
put
the place,
together,
and then put
right.
It together. Try to.
Yeah.
You're not going to put it together, you try. And then, when he got into this country, after the war, they go pick the concentration camp after the war, he took out citizenship, and he got his picture collection over here and opened those archives in New York City.
Yes.
When I got the Strobridge poster collection, he wanted some copies of that. So he contacted me. I liked the guy right off the bat. We hit it off. My wife liked his wife extremely well. So I let him make copies of about 50 or 75 posters, and then I cut him off. And incidentally, see, different things come up to kind of give you a background of the place. I had over 4,500 lithographs before 1943, going back to 1791. Some of them now are selling for auction in New York City. I mean, like them, or close to them, same shows or something, for as much as anywhere from $300 to $1,500 a piece for just one sheet, 42 by 20 inch sheets. No, that's beside the point. Now, I've got letters up in my files. Oliver has tried, he calls me on the telephone about every 3-4 months. We go down there and see him once in a great while. And he still tries to get me to write a book, has ever since, this goes clear back to before the fair, yeah. New York World Fair. And there's just no money made on books, and I don't care for it.
Yeah.
I just don't want it. And in any event, there's a background, and people that know this stuff, I've been able to get information on different things that I was wasn't sure about, and but people of that nature, and Oliver Bettman has the greatest picture archive by 1,000 times of anybody in the world. I don't care, you go to Smithsonian, you go wherever you want to, Library of Congress has got less than that.
So Oliver Bettman, he lives in Fort Myer?
Pardon?
He lives down there in Fort Myer?
Yeah. I haven't seen Oliver for it's been almost 2 years now. He was very ill the last time I saw him. And
your lights went on.
He was going to New York and go through the clinics up there. And after he got back, he called me and said they never found anything serious. So, now these boxes, now you can see in here.
We're going back upstairs. Take my camera.
Oh, here are these cameras.
Is that something that the gold mine that the 93rd experience in the South Carolina States that was so I'm going to
Paperwork and stuff Saturday, all the stuff I fill out, so you can see where I'm putting them.
I used to have a thing there.
Okay.
That was the fan set. All my cards. I'm very interested in putting this thing forever, if you can put forever, in that big Crown Center place at Kansas City, Missouri. Did you ever hear of it?
No, sir. What was it about?
Oh, you missed the boat. There's a giant hill. I call it a mountain. Solid rock, south of Union Station in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely high. They went and burrowed into that mountain and dug the inside of that mountain out and built a shopping center down there.
Huh.
They call it Crown Center. It is really fun.
And do they want to display some of your stuff? I'm sorry, what was the connection?
Yeah, they're gonna put the whole business up in a great big giant auditorium and dehumidify it and everything, but they had four auditoriums. They just kept finally renting them out for stores, and then one of them they had sort of a
closing the door. We're leaving.
Their type of operation. You know what I did?
Did you leave your keys in there?
My always?
That's right. You're talking to me, and you're
I
not.
May have a key under the rug. I always come out and put them back in the car.
That's okay. You're talking to me, and you're not following your normal pattern.
I have a key in here, and when they clean this, I just had this car cleaned.
It's okay.
Is a typical trick of mine, and
okay.
It burns the living daylights out of me.
That's all right. Of course, because there's alarm, there's no other way to get in the building. Well, wait a minute. This doesn't seem to be locked here. Is this locked? This is what you get for doing research like this. Now we're going to make my 12 o'clock appointment. It's okay. Oh, no.
I thought they might have put it in here when they...
Yeah, we're cleaning.
See, I had the car all done on the inside. And I thought they might have put it in here when they did that, but oh shit. Let's just focus on this side. What in the world is that? But that's a normal trick of mine.
And,
That's
okay. That's okay. See, I don't remember seeing you putting them down. Did you put them in your pocket? No, huh?
I don't either. I usually always...
Yeah.
So I'm right back in the seat. And I didn't this time, and I don't go far.
Well, you were talking to me, sir. That was the problem. No, that's okay. Well, you're talking, and you're not...
No, my mind is on 1,000 different things right now. And they wasn't laying up here with no water.
And you left your water inside, though, on the platform. That was the other thing. No, I just tried that.
It's locked.
How did the other guys break in?
Oh, they break something? Have the window boards on this side, in this window. And you see there's no screen on that one window?
Yeah, so they cranked themselves in and they got in.
Yeah, and it had to be kids because there's five of those. Well, I've got to go. See, I've got to think. I don't know where I've got another key. I had it under the rug. And okay. I'll bet you when those guys cleaned the car, I bet they took it out of something in their office. And I don't know where there's another key up home.
For your car, you're saying? All right, I'll stay right here. Well, Mr. Dunn and I went inside the the number two wagon there, the number two truck, which is like a little building on the inside, and so consequently it's a diesel truck, so consequently probably part of this tape is blank. I might have to listen to it again. But this is a real fascinating thing. I just want to make sure I get enough of it documented for the center, for the Folk Life program. I'm going to come back Saturday, and then what I'm going to try to do is take color pictures of his collection and take pictures of Mr. Dunn himself, which I was not able to do yet. And I do have a 12 o'clock appointment, but I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. I said that already. I don't think it's necessary for me to do anything but copy the stuff in the wood carving, although obviously from the conversations that you may or may not have heard, he's got posters and movie footage. Buffalo Bill stuff too, actually. So it's very interesting. It's one of the top three circus historians in the world, he told me inside the truck there that you may not have heard. People are coming to him all the time to talk about this kind of stuff. He's been encouraged to write a book. He doesn't want to bother with it because he wants to...